This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 444, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Loving you is killing me, when it really should fulfill me. Loving you is aching me sadly, when I know it should be making me happy. Loving you.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 444. That's the easiest thing for a computer automated system.
Four.
My name is Josh Flanagan, and joining me are Connor Kilpatrick.
No, it's more like Konar.
Oh, yeah, Konar. That's what it is.
Konar Kilpatrick. Hello. And not bitter or anything.
And Paul Montgomery.
Paul Montgomery.
How did you affect your voice there? That was amazing.
He's part robot.
I heard like a robotic warble there. That's pretty good. So, it's hot in my room. We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of them. One of us has the job of picking the best one that we read that week. That is called the Pick of the Week. We're going to talk about that for the beginning of the show. We'll talk about other comics that came out this week and some other topics of interest, but probably not that one topic of interest we talked about last week, because I think we're done with that topic of interest, and some other stuff.
Is that Bill Murray movies?
That's not what I meant, exactly. It's not it. Hashtag. Right. Before we get to the show...
You've opened the door way
should, listen, if we want to talk more about Bill Murray movies, I think that we're all down with it. I think the audience is down for it. We've shown genuine interest. I think we could almost literally switch this to a Paul Watches Classic Bill Murray Movie podcast, and we could do pretty well for ourselves.
Zombieland was pretty good. I like that one.
See, there you go. It's all sorts of stuff. And then like the controversial 1942 episode. It'll be great. Guys, write that down. Before we get going, there will be spoilers as we talk about what happened in the books that we are talking about. So if you have not read your books, this is probably not the best way for you to listen to them. But if you don't care about that kind of thing, because listen, spoilers are everywhere. What are you going to do? Come back and listen later or do what you will. But you've been warned. Paul, you had the pick.
There actually are some spoilers this week. A bunch of people got blown up, resurrected. Fake dead in the case of the Pick of the Week. The Pick of the Week was Daredevil number 5. And I know Daredevil usually, you know, piece of rancid garbage, but this week it was pretty good. No, I'm kidding. It's always great. That was my one real conflict. It was the first thing I read and I was like, wow, this is great. This is Pick of the Week material, but it's Daredevil again. Like, is that kind of boring? And, you know, I read everything else and I did read some great stuff and we'll talk about some of those.
It took you a year to get to the point in your head where we've been at for a long time.
But it was just ultimately...
Sometimes you just got to pick the book.
Sometimes it's
five
just,
in a row.
I just, if I'm being honest with myself, it's got to be Daredevil number 5 and a great issue. And one of the great threads is that great friendship between Foggy and Matt Murdock. And... We found out in the first issue of this new volume that Foggy is fake dead. But why? Why are we pretending that Foggy's dead, although he's like in a hidden room or something and watching through like a keyhole? What's going on here? What's the story behind this? So it took 5 issues. But we finally get to that point where we have a flashback And Matt basically explains in a beautifully rendered walk through a New York park. Is that Central Park? I don't know if that bridge is popular.
Yes.
It's Central Park. So there and beautiful dappled light going through the leaves. And
I want to go ahead and just point out really quick as I was reading this, that was a really good rendition artistically of Central Park. I knew from the bench exactly where it was. And I know that he doesn't live there and it was impressive. Go on.
Mm-hmm. But it was just, it's beautiful without it being too photo referencey, and just the foliage. I was like, wow, this is really gorgeous. It looked great on my new iPad that I have.
Shut up.
So it's sort of like from that scene, I was like, wow, this is pick of the week material, but maybe I should have more reasons to explain why. And luckily they supplied them with a great new version of Leapfrog in a mech. And when you've got a mech suit, Paul Montgomery's on board. So I was excited to see that. And then you have this great solution to a problem. Matt says, you know, I'm going to be moving to San Francisco. I've outed myself as Daredevil, but you're still in danger. It's going to be a problem. We're going to have to fake kill you. And that's an interesting conversation to have. And Foggy's like, well, I don't want to go out, you know, in some stupid way and just use the cancer as, you know, an excuse and I no longer exist. That kind of sucks. Like, I want to go out like, you know, he mentions, you know, Tony Stark and Spider-Man have both died and come back. And he's like, well, I want to go out like that. I want a big bombastic, you know, exit. So he's kind of bitter about it. And then luckily this whole Leapfrog thing turns into a situation where they can fake Foggy's death as a hero, piloting this exploding mech suit off into the atmosphere like Batman at the end of Dark Knight Rises.
Shh. I thought this was really great on a number of structural levels. And this is a one-shot story. It is, as Paul, you said, it does tie into everything that's been going on. But basically, it's a one-shot. And we've been talking about those lately. Those the that last book we're talking about, the Warren Ellis, last week's pick of the week, Moon Knight. And Wade does a couple of really brilliant things here. One, it opens with the funeral, and you see there's just a giant crowd of people at the funeral. And I didn't really notice that at first because it's Foggy Nelson. He's, you know, of course he'd have a lot of people at his funeral. But this is, you see thousands of people there.
Yeah.
As well as there's news crews and things like that. And then at some point during the middle of the issue, he says, well, who would even care that I died? Who would even come to my funeral? And again, I didn't really realize, it didn't really click with me because, again, it's Foggy Nelson. He's famous. But then, you know, the reason why there's so many people there at the funeral is revealed is because Foggy, quote unquote, gives his life to save everyone from Leapfrog, who was going to blow up. His suit was rigged to explode. It was going to take out, you know, tons of people. And he quote unquote gives his life to save everyone. And that's why it was just a really nice, you know, bow on the end of the story.
And it's such an interesting way that they make it work, like that moment where Daredevil is concerned at first, realizing that the suit is going to explode, and then he smiles, realizing what he can do and this gift that he can give Foggy. And because Wade has carefully set up this idea that that Hank Pym is even now inside the body of Foggy Nelson on a fantastic voyage.
Not in a sexual way.
Yeah. But if he had a phone and he was tweeting, he would say, Foggy Nelson, I am in you.
Right. No.
Because he's in there blasting the cancer cells.
By the way.
I know. We don't do that.
I know you're saying.
But Hank Pym, I think, may be a little bit behind the times in terms of, you know, culture and what's cool. You know.
There was a little bit of a Deus Ex Ant-Man in this issue, but it wasn't as bad as I feared. At first, when you saw him in Foggy's body with his cannon shooting cancer cells, I thought, oh God, they're not going to cure him of this way.
Yeah, it was a little...
But then...
It's just like treatment, basically.
You know that cancer cells are actually large, spiky, and green? It's how you can tell which ones they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's easy that way. But
I understand science works.
But it was great. And you mentioned, let's talk about the colors again. We often talk about how great Jordi Belair is. She's not the colorist here, although you'd think she was because it's so great, but it's Javier Rodriguez. I think this is his last issue.
Oh, is it? He's been on since the beginning, right?
Because there was a tweet earlier this week about how he just had finished his last issue of Daredevil or something that. Maybe this isn't his last issue, but this is great. The foliage in particular in Central Park and the way the shadows drop on the people and it's a really great coloring job. And one of the things I like about this book is the way it looks, and not just because of the Somni art, but the way it sort of pops color wise. It's very bright. and Shiny book, which is representative of Matt's mood as opposed to the Bendis, Brubaker, Frank Miller era of, you know, Kevin Smith of dark and shadowy. This is a very out in the open daylight book, and it looks great.
And then in the opening sequence, you've got that image of Foggy sitting on the bed watching footage of the funeral and the really harsh shadows cast over his face. And it's, you know, what is the situation? What is his relationship like with, you know, with Matt? Is he angry at him? And then by the end, you have a really, you know, touching moment where he realizes that, you know, as long as, you know, Matt knows, you know, I'm fine, I'm good. That's because he's a really good guy, and I respect him. I look up to him, and I'm very thankful for basically what he set up for me.
I think one of the things that's been really nice about this run from the beginning is that I think Wade has a good take and an interesting portrayal of Foggy's relationship with Matt, because, I mean, they're more or less they're brothers in a way.
Kinda, that, yeah.
You know, they fight a lot. Like they really, the things about the one irritate the shit out of the other one because they're so close. But it's an indelible. See, this is one of the things about the stories. No matter how bad it seems like their relationship gets or whatever, you know that they love each other. And
it's like they can't schedule the podcast, and someone said something stupid, and yeah. Oh, hold on, wait a minute.
Well, I think that's exactly what it makes me think of.
Well, I think the perfect example in this issue is when Matt is carrying Foggy because he's winded and, you know, he's got cancer. He's not going to be able to run very quickly. And he says, I'm kind of thankful that cancer, you know, took like 80 pounds off of you, because this would have been much harder to carry you off and rescue you. And so the ribbing, you know, it's so there's the, you know, the heartfelt moments at the end, but then they're also ribbing each other.
It is that. But like even the last sort of bit where, he, you know, as I'm glad that Matt's, but like before it, he's sort of being very honest about all the things that bug him about Matt.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, and at the end of the day, when you take it down, well, this one fact about him, this one thing about who he is why, you know, I'm always going to be, you know, why, you know, he's always like the most important in the world to me. Or, you know, I just think that's been a through line through this whole thing with their relationship. And I just think it's been really well done. It's a nice example of it, I think.
I think also,
at the end, you kind of think he's still like, are you still mad at him? And it's like, oh, no, I can't be.
I think the most elegant thing about it, and the thing that you could easily forget just because you sort of know what's coming, that Daredevil wouldn't be smiling if he didn't know he could save Foggy from the situation. He yells out, and he knows that Foggy is going to save the day and sacrifice himself. Foggy doesn't know that he's going to be rescued.
Right.
He's not thinking about the fact that, you know, Hank Pym is inside him and can, you know, get him out of there. He wants to help people. So he gets a real hero moment where it's actually genuine. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing bad about this book. On every level, it's a masterclass in comics. And I'm always happy when it's out. I'm always excited. So, good pick.
I'm glad.
We had a new number one this week. Grayson number one, the new Dick Grayson comic from writers Tim Seeley and Tom King and artist Michael Janin, who used to do Justice League Dark.
Good artist. Good writers.
Yeah.
Tim Seeley, writer of Hack Slash and Mini Image Comics.
Currently Revival, which is a very good book.
Mm-hmm. And Tom King is apparently a former operative.
He can't talk about that.
Right. No, but he's
literally.
So brings a level of authenticity to this.
I didn't even think about that. Tom King wrote a novel called,
Once Crowded Sky.
There you go. Once
I
Crowded
was a
Sky.
Spy for the CIA.
That too. But again, he can't talk about that.
But Tom was spying.
I can't talk about it.
And then he also wrote my favorite short story that I've read in years,
which was the CIA also.
See, you can't prove it or disprove it. We can neither confirm nor deny. No, he wrote that short story in the Vertigo anthology with Tom Fowler on art.
Oh, that's right.
About time traveling Hitler.
Yeah, right. That was really
good. It's literally my favorite short story that I've read in forever. So I was looking forward to this, but my question is, what in the hell does this have to do with Dick Grayson? And I don't mean that flippantly. Like, I really was like, why is it Dick Grayson? Is this something? Because I wasn't.
In Fear itself, Villains United, whatever the fuck that event was called,
right.
Dick Grayson was outed as Nightwing. He was outed publicly. Somehow no one made the connection to Batman and Bruce Wayne, but he was outed publicly. And then killed by Lex Luthor, but revived.
Future's End, you mean, right?
No. The one Forever Evil.
Forever Evil, there you go.
And then revived mere moments later. But so the world found that he was Nightwing and then thought he died. So Batman has taken this opportunity to send Dick out undercover in this, what's it called, Spider? What is this organization called?
Spiral?
Spiral. This spy organization. They're not the CIA. They're not Checkmate. But they are a different organization. And so he's now joined this organization and is working undercover. That is really it. I'm just looking at this as sort of a fun, cool Elseworlds story starring Dick Grayson, because I thought it was super fun.
Like Joshua was trying to sort of reverse engineer this, like what are they doing here? And I think it's just like, let's do something completely different with Dick Grayson. Right. This is a really...
Because they've already got a Robin, they've got a Red... Well, they don't really have a Robin. They've got a Red Robin, they've got a Batgirl, they've got a Red Hood. We've known that Dan DiDio has had it in for Nightwing for years. So let's
do something completely different. Yeah, it's fun.
I don't think it's... I just was curious what if there was a through line. I don't need there to be.
I mean, they're always looking... He was a cop for a while.
I remember that. Does that even count anymore?
No, but like they're always trying to do something with him. They don't ever seem comfortable just leaving him as Nightwing. So this was... Cool. I really liked when Midnighter showed up and he faced off against Dick Grayson. That's when I was like, oh.
Yeah. I thought it was great.
That's an interesting combination. Yeah.
I thought they were going to be a team, and I was like, that's going to be interesting. But this was fun. It was basically dropped in the middle of a mission. Dick Grayson is in a yellow wig, is on or blonde wig, is on a train trying to extricate a Russian from the train before other agencies can take him out. And he's got a partner who we learn at the end is Helena Bertinelli. And I thought it looked fantastic. I thought it was very high energy, fast paced action movie feel to it.
I thought he was going
to
be in Checkmate for a little bit, and I thought that would be bad, but they just name Checkmated it.
Yeah, he's not in Checkmate.
Just art wise, I knew it was Michael Janin, and but looking at it, it looks totally different from what he was doing on
Justice League Dark.
Justice League Dark, yeah, sorry. I was going to say Dark Avengers. Jesus. So it looks completely different, and and I think the coloring is a big part of it. They have fun with it's not totally like mod spy kind of thing, like what's going on in the Winter Soldier book, which we'll be talking about, but it's just enough. Like it feels like a modern spy thriller.
Mm-hmm.
But like a, like a modern James Bond movie.
Right.
Maybe because with the like looking at the train from the distance, when you see Midnighter there in the beginning, like that reminded me of the opening of Skyfall. And I thought it was pretty cool.
I like the device that the high level agents have this technology that makes their face all blurry.
That's cool. Yeah,
and so I guess the agents also have it in the field, and it's creepy looking, but it's also a cool device. And the whole thing is this agency Spiral is trying to figure out who superheroes are. So they've already got Batman pinned down as Bruce Wayne, which feels like should be a later on thing, but yeah, we're already going there. So I'd say there's lots of interesting elements to play with here.
They're raising the stakes right from the start. Can't blame them for that.
There's no stakes higher than that, really.
They could know what his middle name is.
That's true. I don't even know what his middle name is.
Robert the Bruce.
Robert the Bruce Wayne. So that would make Bruce's middle name, wouldn't it? Like it did with Hulk in the 70s.
That's actually been throwing people off for years.
But so my question to Connor, since you're the biggest Dick Grayson fan here, I could have gone a different way with that. Did you think that did it feel like Dick Grayson? Did the voice?
Yeah, I thought it did. I thought they had a good handle on him. I was really, really not concerned, but I was really apprehensive about this series. I didn't know what to make of it. The cover image is very striking of Dick holding a gun, and he's done that before. He's again when he was a cop, but it's so sort of anathema to the Batman heroes. So I didn't know what I was going to make of the series, but I really thought it was a fun, fast-paced adventure, and I think that's what fits Dick's personality. I mean, he seemed like Dick Grayson here. It worked for me. I liked Helena Bertinelli a lot. I thought she looked great and very unique and very Italian.
That two-page spread with the circus flippy flip where he threw the body and then caught it later.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
That was pretty dope, yeah.
That was very Robin feeling.
Cool,
yes.
Cool things coming out of the bat offices these days.
Yeah. And then if you look at the front page, the first page, again, you see how dumb that Robin costume redesign is.
Going there now.
He's wearing a backpack, basically.
Well, he's got to put stuff in there. All these years, you've been wondering where that stuff is. They're just trying to fix it. How could the utility belt hold all that stuff? And that's why.
This week also saw Star Wars 19, the second to last issue of the Brian Wood run at the end of the Dark Horse license. And the previous storyline was pretty bad.
I left. I left as soon as the jokes ran dry about that guy.
It was the forced marriage between Leia and this prince because the rebels were going to use their planet as base. But as it turned out, there was a whole big betrayal by the prince's security agent. He'd sold them out to the Imperials. The Imperials came and blew the shit out of the planet, and the rebels escaped. So now we sort of back the basics of this issue 19. I think it's going to be a two-parter to end the storyline, and it feels very much like the beginning of the series. I think even the original artist is back, and you know, the last issue had the last arc had serious art problems. I never was able to really recognize who anybody was when Wedge and Han were on the same panel. I'd never know who was who. But we're back with sort of a very basic storyline. One of Leia's childhood friends has been off doing a secret mission for the Alliance. She didn't even know about it, and she's in trouble. She's being stalked by IG-88 and sends a distress call out. So Leia grabs the Millennium Falcon with Han and Luke and Chewie to go out to save her. It's just sort of a very...
All of Leia's childhood friends are dead. They were on Alderaan.
Well, that's why she's so anxious to save her, because all of them are dead.
So she is Alderaanian?
Yes. Yeah, no, she's... I forget which planet, but it's one of the recognizable ones. She would come to visit her friend Leia.
She's human?
Well, there are no humans.
Well, they're no Earthlings, but they're...
Right. She's human. She looks like human.
Humanoid? Okay.
So she's so desperate to save her because all of her connections to the past are gone. She doesn't want this last link to go. I thought that was a nice little device there. And it just feels very much the, you know, focusing on the small crew and, you know, on the Millennium Falcon against all odds. IG-88's there with a badass gun. Although he talks to himself a little bit too much for a robot, I think. I thought it was really fun. I think if you liked Star Wars in the beginning and fell off, I would check out 19 and 20.
I think droid psychology is very interesting because he's also a bounty hunter. So, like, you know, what makes a droid become a bounty hunter?
Right.
He's very
excited about the credits he's going to spend when he captures this girl. And I'm just like, really?
What's he going to spend them on?
Upgrades.
Oil can.
Oil can.
Oil can.
This oil bath is going to feel so good.
Well, he's finally going to be able to afford the next Mac upgrade.
Yeah, yeah.
He can afford
a nice place where he can go shut down for a while.
It's true.
For example, they love to do that apparently, but not forced. They don't want it to be a shut down under duress.
Dantooine. She's from Dantooine. That's where she's from.
Liar.
I like the idea of a short comic based on like 3PO worrying if he can take a Mavericks update. Is it safe yet?
Is it okay?
Constantly worrying.
So I would say check it out if you
see 3PO is. It depends. If you're a protocol droid, probably yes. Constantly worrying.
Of that first couple of issues, I would definitely go back. Or if you didn't pick this up, go check out Star Wars 19. 20 is the last issue. And then we'll wrap it up. And then, Carlos Danda is the artist. He was the original artist.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
So I would say you guys should check out 19 and 20.
Okay, cool.
Now, I'm really curious to see, Josh, what you thought of the Royals Masters of War number 6, the finale to the 6-issue miniseries.
I liked it a lot. I certainly wasn't what I was expecting, so I was kind of impressed by the way that it ended. It was a little bit of a... It wasn't a big sweeping V for victory kind of ending.
Went out with a bang, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
Or slightly prior to the bang.
So, like, on the one hand, like, I don't know. It wasn't like, we've won the war. It didn't feel like that, but it felt appropriate, and it felt like... the ending we deserve, I guess.
I
felt like it felt a little flat at the end.
Yeah, I can see that, but
flattened by bombs.
I didn't dislike it. I just it ended, and I was like, oh.
I agree, but it fit with. I don't know. It fit with the line, you know, like what the story was. I was like, oh, it's not an inappropriate ending for it. It just kind of leaves you.
And I think the more I think about it, the more I like it. But when I in the moment, you know, reading it live, I was a little disappointed. But looking back on it, so basically this has been the alternate World War II story in which all the royal families have superpowers and they've entered the war. And so in the last issue, we found out that the King of England and his son, one of his sons, were betraying England to the Germans because they were part of the German family line too. And we're going to move to Germany and become the royals of Germany.
Basically, yeah.
And in this issue, it opens with the Japanese emperor, who's immortal, deciding not to get involved despite Tojo begging him to get involved because Japan's being beaten by the Americans. And so we see that they're about to be bombed by the Enola Gay. We cut to Germany where the two sons fight and two English sons fight, and pretty grisly fight, actually.
Yeah.
And then there's a even grislier fight with their dad, and then there's a bomb dropped on Germany.
Lots of I-beams.
Which, by the way, kind of cathartic.
This
not just Germany, but dropped on top of Hitler's bunker.
Is
an atomic bomb.
Speaking of Hitler, this has one of the best lines in any comic that you'll likely find this week or any week. When the surviving prince sees Hitler and he knows that they're about to die, he sends up I-beams basically showing where they should drop the bombs, and you know that this is all gonna go out in a big blast of glory. He says, "You, the greasy fashion calamity, who looks like an overmothered pervert waiter, go get us a drink."
Really great stuff in there.
Really good.
It was very cathartic, and then they dropped.
I know, like it's clearly written by a Brit. Like there's just a little bit of a God. We didn't get to kill him. We wanted to, and he went in his bunker, and he took that from us. And this is that sort of an addition to the alternate history.
But you also feel really bad because there's the emaciated German urchins on the street right above where the bomb is going to blow. I mean, it's kind of – there's no happy ending here.
Well, that's also sort of – it makes you think a little bit about – because in this story, Japan sort of demurs. So you sort of – it just makes you think about the reality of what the war was, you know,
well,
at least for Japan.
The emperor says war is perpetual and it's never ending, and no matter what you do, there'll be another war, which is fairly true. The fact that there's the last thing we see is not Hitler's face before the bomb drops, but these two starving little children as the bomb is falling on them to get to Hitler.
It's like the little match girl. It's like the precious moments kids, like
a little rough,
looking up and watching these bombs drop. Yeah. That's the theme. That's the motif they're going for. They also have fun in here with the translated language as they're flying and there's bombs falling. One of the princes says bugger and then says translated from German.
I didn't know.
I was like, that's funny.
This was a really great mini. And if it does make it out to trade, I assume it will. And you're a fan of that kind of story, you should check it out.
Definitely.
I imagine most people haven't had issues, but we've loved it from the beginning.
Yep. Yeah, but I think I think it's a good end. I think it's the right ending. You know, that's it. It's not. Yeah,
it's the ending we deserve.
Stop it.
So Spider-Man 209, number 91. What did we think?
2099. Let's go back 20 years or so.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. I missed the 2099 era, and there is a strong, like, there's the ROM people, and then there's the 2099 people. Yes. And I don't get any of it. So
I loved this book when it was out originally. It was Peter David writing and Rick Leonardi on art. And I read Spider-Man in 2099. I read Ravage 2099 because it was Stan Lee on writing. And I thought, hey, Stan Lee, it's going to be awesome because I was 13. And I think I read some Doom, but I didn't really read a lot of Doom. That was Warren Ellis's, or one of his early books. And Spider-Man was great, though. It was a really great book. It was legitimately really great book. It was about Miguel O'Hara, the half-Irish, half-Latino Spider-Man in the future.
There's a Mexican-Irish restaurant in my hometown.
Right.
Sorry, putting that out there.
So this was the return? I mean, I haven't been reading any other Spider-Man books.
Well,
so
he was
in
Superior Spider-Man
So I thought this was not a failure, but it was, as a first issue, it didn't do its job enough. It really relied on you having prior knowledge. And you can figure out, you can suss things out, but he's in the present day. you know, because no one will read a book that doesn't take place in the present day Marvel Universe. So he's in the present day trying to find it, trying to save his company in the future. He's working for his grandfather. It's just like there's already all these things established. And I spent half the time trying to figure out what I had missed, which is a disservice to a first issue, especially one that had such a strong fan base in the past. But take that out of the equation, I thought the story was fun. It was a time cop, basically, who has come to bring him back. And it goes, you know, he goes horribly. I liked that he basically will scan you to see what your future lies. And if you're not important in the future, he has no problem killing you with his giant beams. So he's like, oh, you don't even have children. So the story was fun. Peter David is back on writing duties. And I just felt like.
Is this his comeback?
He did X-Force for a long
time. Yeah, I know, but X-Factor. He'd had the stroke. X-Factor.
Right, I guess so.
No, he's been doing X-Factor.
Okay.
Yeah, X-Factor.
Never missed a deadline, that guy.
And artist Will Sliney is really good. It's just I felt like I was missing a lot of stuff. And they give you the backstory in the first page. It tells you everything that's going on. I just feel like for such a big return, they should make it more of an introductory issue. But if you liked the old stuff, you'll probably like this issue.
I was disappointed when I found out that it was set now and not the future.
No one will read those books, Paul. It's not now.
I'm lying. I might read the book. I'd check it out at least. I don't know if I'd stick with it, but.
So it was fun. I'm glad I read it. I did really love those old Spider-Man books, and so it had that feeling out to it. But part of the fun with those books was being in the future, like kind of like Batman Beyond, you know, all the technology and the crazy buildings and
I feel like that would be the appeal.
Heavily tattooed old people.
Right.
That's the other book.
Where everyone wearing a lot of neon on their clothes. You know, so there you go. Also, if that sounds fun to you, I believe they started putting those out in trade form. So if you wanted to check out those old Peter David Spider-Man 2099 books, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can go to Amazon, make all your purchases. We get a little piece of that sale, not from you, but from Amazon. It helps keep the site going. We appreciate everyone who does that. You just make it your bookmark link. There's a logo on ifanboy.com/Amazon that takes you to Amazon. Once you go there, you can make that your bookmark link and never have to think about it again. I have that on mine. I keep forgetting it's there, and every time I go to Amazon, I help myself. So we appreciate everyone who helps us out to keep the show going. Also, the people who go to ifanboy.com/registration who sign up to become iFanboy members at $3 a month or $30 a year helps the show out directly. You can donate any amount you want there also, and we appreciate everyone who takes the time to help us out through those two methods, and we appreciate that.
You complete us.
You complete the circle that is iFanboy.
Yeah. So Avengers on the cover, number 7. We just talked about this like 2 weeks ago, didn't we?
Avengers on the cover. Marvel book,
but it's a Marvel book.
I have like all of the books stacked up, and I was like, oh, I haven't even another one.
There's a lot going on.
Well, they're getting them out. He's only 10. I think 10 is the last issue.
Yeah, so we got Kev Walker back on art after 6. He wasn't the artist, but anyways, I kind of wish that this book was, and I know why it's that way, but I wish there was sort of. The schedule allowed for Kev Walker to do every issue because I really like his art and I wish that it was just like a consistent thing. But, you know, it does kind of work to have a different artist because they're kind of panning around the ensemble. You know,
but
last time,
it does make it feel more like the original story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good.
So what's cool about this is back in issue 5, they resurrected Alex from Runaways. Mm-hmm. Who's sort of the Lex Luthor of that group, the turncoat of the Runaways, and now is basically schooling Miko, right? On how to be bad, how to be evil, how to best use her powers, and I think it's a really cool idea. Part of me was like, oh man, is that sacrilege bringing Alex back? Because it was such a big moment for the beginning of the Runaways, but if anyone was going to do it. Not and it wasn't going to be Brian K. Vaughan.
I was going to say I'm pretty sure it'd be Brian K. Vaughan.
Well, no, but in terms of I get that, but in terms of like tone and some of the themes, this is a good place to bring him back. Telling stories about the sort of moral gray area for all of these characters, you know, pretending to be evil. Kind of acting out evil,
whole reason they're acting out is because they. Publicly murdered Arcade, and so people consider them now to be supervillains, but yet, find out in this issue, perhaps he's not dead. He's not dead. He's right there.
He's just hanging
out. It's good. I thought this is, you know, this is very good. I love this examination of these heroes on the edge.
Mm-hmm. And just a cool use of the Runaways. Feel like they're the most relevant that they've been in a very long time.
Between this and X-Men, they're all over the place.
Yeah. So I thought this was a really good issue, and if you're, you know, a big Runaways fan, you definitely want to get on this.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 13. Almost the pick of the week because it was a very, very funny issue. Even for Superior Foes of Spider-Man, I thought this was hilarious. And part of that was because Mach 5 went furniture shopping and couldn't get out the glass door. And just shattered the glass door with his wings.
I like that is an ongoing joke.
You know what?
Basically, the joke is he can't fit through things.
And it's more appropriate of a runner than I've let on because I keep bringing it up, but they've only gone to that well like twice.
Yeah, it really is. It sort of make you. They don't usually spend a whole page on slapstick in most comics.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do it here a little bit. There's not a lot of places for that. There's certainly not a places for it in Marvel. So I respect that.
This seems to be one of the true sort of heirs to the old Justice League book, which would spend a whole page on slapstick. And or an issue on them shopping or, you know, doing the day-to-day stuff of that.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that, but that's right on. I mean, we've got Shocker, you know, all up in his apartment, holding, you know, Silvermane's head like out the window so he can see what's going on. And yeah, it's pretty great. And now like all the characters who've been sort of split up are meeting up by the end of this issue. So Shocker, who's been off on his own with Silvermane, is now gonna bump back into Boomerang and all of them. So great, great book.
My problem with this book is that I continually forget to notice it.
Like, what are you talking about? You were like the main champion.
No, I know, and I totally love it. It's just when I scan the books, like I don't see it for whatever reason. It looks like some kind of like it always. I don't notice it, and then I see it later. Oh right, and I read it right away. But for some reason, when I scan the cover with my eyes, it just doesn't. For whatever, I've missed it several times.
Actually, they show the preview. The next cover is really nice looking.
Yeah,
it's sort of it's a throwback to the first cover. And they're sort of leaning on their sort of getaway van, and but the camera's up top looking down on them.
What I'm saying has nothing to do with the quality of the book. It has to do with the quality of other books that, for some reason, it makes me think of when I see the cover and I'm not really thinking about it. I'm like, oh, that's no. I'm like, oh, right, no, I do love that one for whatever reason. And I can't seem to get past it.
Ape Sapien.
Yeah. I was like super backlogged on these BPRD books, and I actually read like a bunch of them to catch up, and I almost started to lose the thread with this book, and then the last two issues it really pulled me back in, because I kind of like they understood that people were losing the thread, and they really did a good job of explaining what the hell this was and where it was going, and I just appreciated that, this was going to be one of the first BPRD books that I stopped reading, basically, which is a shame because Ape Sapien is a very important character in the whole thing. And I'm really like, I'm starting to wonder, I know that their whole apocalypse thing is the worldview that they're sticking with for a while, but I'm like, how long is this going to go on? There has to be some sort of nadir. And I don't know. This was a good, it sort of brought things back to a point where I felt like we had a little bit of focus.
The world has to stop ending at some point.
Well,
Does it?
Yeah. Do you want to read that forever?
No.
Like, hey, let's go around this corner. Nope, this is all wreck too. That's what it's been like for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's
who's the team on this
bleak.
Now?
Because
I've lost track of it too.
It's Scott Alley and Mike Mignola writing, and not Max Fiumara, but his brother. Sebastian Fiumara, maybe, I think. Hold on, I gotta open it and look.
That sounds very similar in tone to the next book we're gonna talk about.
Though. Well, the only other one, and I know that this is slightly against protocol, but because I read 12, 13, and 14 all at once, the end of 13 had like an 8-page short story related to the main story with art by Guy Davis. And it was so good to see Guy Davis art on this again.
Ooh.
That I'd forgotten how incredibly good Guy Davis art on these characters is. I mean, it was perfect. It was like, you know those commercials for like contact lenses when they show you like one side of the screen and then the other one comes into focus?
Yeah.
It was like that. I was like, oh, that's the BPRD. Like, I wouldn't have lost it just showed me how much the art makes a difference. And it's good art on this, but it's not Guy Davis. It's very different than Guy Davis, actually.
Ben Stein has never looked so good as when he's drawn by Guy Davis.
That's true. Anyway, so if you were dropping off of this, I think it's worth keeping up with.
Okay.
In a larger sense.
I will catch up.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I'm looking up at the thing.
The Walking Dead.
Right. I have two of mine in a row here. The Walking Dead, like, they did this they did a time shift, and they're like, we're in a different kind of version of their world. And it's kind of been like we've been hanging out in what is this sort of rosy world for three issues or so. And of course, there's the one thing that's a little bit weird, and they don't know what it is. And in this, they have, like, Rick decided not to have Negan executed. He's just in this cell in one of the buildings in their happy little community. And this is the one where you sort of see how that's going to start to fall apart. And it was a really good issue with a great ending. And I really like how well they have stuck to this new paradigm. I think if the TV show does it, it'll be really cool. Because, cool. Again, you cannot keep wandering Apocalypse forever and have it still be interesting. I think there's
they've done it for 100 plus issues.
Right. You can do it for a long time, but eventually you're going to be like, oh, is this something going to happen? You know, things are happening, I know. But I think it works very well. Although, on Battlestar Galactica, it didn't work so much. So
this week was the finale of Winter Soldier, The Bitter March, number 5, from Rick Remender. And who's the artist on this? I just closed my iPad. I forgot.
It is...
You looked that up while I like this issue so much. So in this issue, this is...
Oh, I opened the DC app. God damn.
This is taking place in the 60s. Not Ron Paul. Wow, I'm all over the place.
Roland Boschi.
You know what happened?
Jesus.
This is exactly what happened. I completely tuned out during The Walking Dead because I didn't want to hear anything about it. And so I'm like someone who just woke up. Like, what happened? So
good
I'm
Lord.
Awake now. Okay. So this is the Mod spy story. It takes place in the 60s. It features, it featured in the beginning Nick Fury, but it's mostly
is it hot
been
there?
No, it's actually pretty pleasant. It featured the agent who's currently been a villain in the Captain America books, the Iron Nail. I forget the name.
It's awesome, by the way.
And so he's teamed up with a Winter Soldier who has started to remember who he really is. So he's been saving the day. And I thought what was great about this issue was, you know, he's finally saved the day. He's going to save the scientist who's been the MacGuffin of this whole story. And he's basically getting away, and Nick Fury shows up in all of his American glory and shoots him, and basically sends him back into his evil ways because he sends him back to the Russians, and the Russians reprogram him. But I thought it was great that, you know, in this moment of triumph, Nick Fury shows up and talking about commies and chomping a cigar and saves the day, but also doesn't save the day. I thought that was a great little moment.
I know there's been a lot of talk about this writer this week, but this is another example of he's doing some of the best work at Marvel. I just think it's super, like, it, you know, the unexpected twist, the sort of subversion of your expectations, the way that this book ties into the other book, very, mm-hmm. like the whole time you're going, well, wait, Shen, isn't that the guy who's in the other book, who's yep. a bad guy? And, mm-hmm. he's, and like, you just, all of those little itches in the back of your mind are getting answered if you wait for it. And yes. I think that's really cool.
It was a really fun miniseries.
Yes, it was. Looks awesome. Super action. It was good. It's really a great
way to do a support mini. Like,
yes.
It's in support of the main thing, but it also tells its own, you know, it's even if you're not reading, you know, Captain America, it's satisfying on its own.
And if you want some versa. Old school Nick Fury, who's not director of S.H.I.E.L.D., but is an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That'd be great if Bucky was like, I'm going to cut off your head someday, you jerk. He's like, you're going to catch me first.
All right, so those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com. You can find the post for this show, and you can talk about those books. You can talk about other books of the week, other things we didn't talk about. I'm awake now, so that's good.
Shall I read an audience question?
Yeah, I did a really good job of zoning out. I didn't hear a word Josh said about The Walking Dead.
All right, Brian from Pants Unknown, or Parts Unknown would probably be right. Has Wolvie ever, and he means Wolverine, ever been depicted in comics shaving, or is the area around his mouth just naturally tamed? His claw would make a fantastic razor, and he wouldn't worry about nicks. Logan brand razors from Marvel, marketing gold. Do you think Professor X shaves or waxes that shiny dome?
We're doing shtick now?
Well, Chuck isn't doing much shaving because he's dead.
Well, there's no way he'd wax his head. He would.
I think he psychically.
Connor, what do you do?
I shave it. If someone were to wax my head after they came out of the coma, I would murder them. I mean, this is a really sensitive part of your body that's right above your brain. I mean, I don't know how anatomy works. I think there's a skull in the middle there, but
so you just use a regular razor that you use on your face.
A razor blade. Sometimes I use a Bowie knife. But that's only when I'm in the jungle.
Mix
fighting.
It up in like a, you know, army helmet.
I always like the idea of really digging deep on Wolverine's hair because, you know, why does it only grow in those parts? Clearly it grows everywhere wildly. And we never see him shaving the face, the mouth part. So why only there? And why does it grow into the two spikes? And why does he keep cutting it that way? Shouldn't at this point someone say, listen.
Wolverine's hair and face are sort of like the physics and time questions in Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be discussed. They don't necessarily make sense, and that's not the point.
Yeah, totally.
Although, to their credit, the one thing that you can always say about the X-Men movies and Hugh Jackman is that they managed to somehow bridge the gap between that ridiculous Marvel haircut. And it wasn't just Wolverine's haircut. It was the Owl. It was
a lot of haircuts.
Star Fox. It was a bunch of people. I don't know who first came up with that.
For some reason at Marvel, they were like, let's just run with this hairstyle.
I think there was something that it was based on that was real. Quicksilver. And it turned into that stylized thing. And then they just use it as a theme.
Weird.
What if he has like a setting on his claws and he can pop them and instead of going snicked, they go shick. And he can shave.
Oh God. I want to wax your head.
It makes more sense than it goes Gillette.
Although that's true. That's true. But
that is true.
You know what? You're a really competent joke writer. So, you know.
Mach 3 Turbo.
All right. Let's
3? What are we? Aren't we on the
Mach 3 Turbo?
I know. Is that one? I don't know. I switched to the Harry's ones. Anyway.
What are those?
Pretty good. It's a little chintzier feeling, but it's a hell of a lot cheaper. And my handle is orange, which I think is rad. And I, again, this is key, don't have to go to a store.
Well, I get the Dollar Shave Club, but
yeah.
Harry's is like one step above that.
Yeah, they're nice. They're good. I mean, I don't shave that often, so I'm like a once a week shaver. So,
chick.
You have to concentrate really hard the rest of the week to grow some hair.
It doesn't even look different. It just starts to itch more.
Okay. Scott from Parts Unknown.
You've been waiting on that for days.
Yep.
I just finished reading the first Black Science trade and loved it as a dark homage to Mr. Fantastic. It reminded me of another great homage to the Fantastic Four in the great Warren Ellis planetary comic of years past. That got me thinking, what are your favorite homage comics?
This is a cool question.
It is.
Because it's a neat sort of subset of comics. It's not necessarily ripping off ideas.
Wouldn't you say that all of comics is a homage to something else?
It's constantly, it's like, it's just this circuitous homage-orama, really.
But there's a specific set of comics that he's talking about.
Right.
And
I would
from
say
all over the place.
Alan Moore's are almost all
like
this.
Watchmen, yeah.
No,
everything.
And, you know, Tom Strong and Top Ten and, you know, all those Legion of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I think those are all really great homage comics. Tom Strong is especially a homage to sort of the...
I'll give you a real one.
Doc Savage type books. And I thought all those... When he came out with the ABC comics in the 90s, I think all those were just really wonderful homage books.
Yeah, I think Godland.
Yeah.
is an homage to him. Actually, everything Joe Casey does is a little bit of that too.
Well, he's working in comics currently. Well,
yeah, you know, I know, like, but like he's specifically like I feel like he picks things that fit with that. But like, you know,
like Godland is, you know, Batman.
Yeah, but it's also like I don't know, I think it references visually Watchmen and sort of that era very much. But Godland specifically is this sort of take more modern take on you know Kirby post Marvel comics and his huge imagination and stuff and but with that sort of sick weird lean on it, but obviously like it looked exactly like Kirby the way that Tom Seeley drew it.
There's some that are just like direct like Glory and Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then there's some
Supreme
that are sort of,
and Superman.
Yeah, and then there are some that are sort of like a mishmash
or
kind of
the
thing.
Authority. I mean, there's
the Authority's probably the best, at least at the time, like in the context of when it existed.
Like Paul Pope's Battling Boy, like there's a little bit of Commandy in there. There's a little bit of Thor in there. There's a little Batman in there. That's all sort of mixed around, but it's inescapable that it's you know taking notes from something.
Well, the
some things.
OMAC, for sure. This week was interesting because we had the second issue of Infinity Man, the Forever People, and I thought it worked much less because the art wasn't a direct homage to Kirby.
Mm, okay.
I thought it took away from the feeling of the book and therefore made it feel more. Instead, a homage can feel dated if done wrong, and this I felt very dated because of the art.
It's funny because homage can be all sorts of things, or it can be referenced. Like I was thinking, like currently, like Peter Panzerfaust is sort of a, I don't know, if it, like does it count if it's like a take on Peter Pan?
I guess you could say it's a homage to war. I think here he means more of a homage to something specific.
Yeah.
To comics.
Yeah.
I mean, this pulpy stuff, the pulpy stuff that Alan Moore made, that's the stuff that comes to my head right away. And that's the stuff I like the most. Like, I love Tom Strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I didn't like it at the time, but later I liked it a lot. I see what you're saying, obviously. That is the most homage-y of them.
Well, you know, I mean, he mentioned Planetary. That was the same era as those Alan Moore books, 2000, 2001. And that was a really great homage because every issue, because the whole thing was a homage to the Fantastic Four, but then every issue itself almost was a homage to something different. To a genre.
Not even necessarily a comic genre.
Right.
But like they did like the Hong Kong action movie issue, which by the way is so ambitious to do in a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even make sense, but that's one of those, they did it.
I think you can sort of break it down into there's some that are in homage because like, you know, if you create a speedster character, you know, you're automatically going to be referencing in some way like the Flash. But then there's stuff where like Black Science, where it's a little bit, I think it's a bit more subtle, but where you take that kind of character, that kind of personality and you're, or Watchmen would be a good example.
Go ahead and you finish.
Where you can take those superheroes and you know that that's kind of referring to the, you know, the analog characters, the original DC or Charlton characters, and able to say things that you wouldn't if you use the original characters. That you can actually make a point by creating these facsimiles of them.
I would be really surprised if Black Science was a homage. Just knowing.
There's sort of like hints of it.
It seems more of a homage to the mad scientist character.
Yeah.
Than it is, which is to Mr. Fantastic. I mean, he's got a family, but so do most characters in fiction.
How about this, though? To stay on a topic. Fear Agent seems like, at least visually and thematically, very much an homage to Wally Wood science fiction stories.
Right. Yeah. I'm not surprised by that. What I'm just saying is I don't see Rick Remender homaging a Marvel comic in his
Exactly, but I'm saying like that's just another one I thought of, like in the same, you know, same artist, but in the same, like that's definitely like
he seems to like to do the homage to the pulp era more than anything, which I think this is also
fantastic pulp writer, and
this is I think more of a pulp book than a homage to it,
and he's a pulp writer, he's a pulp fiction genre writer, and that's a thing that I think some people get about it and some people don't, which is why his work is polarizing.
There's a couple of weird ones. So that arc of Criminal, where they had like sort of the Archie send up.
Criminal. Yeah, perfect.
Criminal itself, really.
Mm.
In general.
God, that Criminal arc was so good.
And the other one, this is going slightly out, you know, out of comics, but Batman Beyond, I always remember they had this episode where they had this sort of pastiche of the Fantastic Four. It was clearly lampooning the Fantastic Four, and they turned out to be villains. And I don't remember if there was like three of them, but it was clearly like there was an analog for, you know, the Thing and, you know, all that. So, and that's something where you're supposed to be like, you're not going, oh man, that's a total ripoff of that. Oh, I get what they're doing. That's really funny that they're making that point with those characters.
The thing about this is we could literally do 4 hours on this question because
I love this question.
There's so much homage in comics and in genre work to begin with, but those are some of our favorites. Good question, Scott. Thank you.
Right on.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Brian. They both emailed us at contact@ifanboy.com, and that website, again, I mean, that email address, again, is working. We had a brief problem with our provider, but it's back up in a different service, so now feel free to email us at contact@ifanboy.com, and we get your email on the show. We may, again, call email bankruptcy on those old ones. Everything got imported into a single mailbox. We set everything all sorted and labeled and marked as read and unread or responded to. Now it's all just in one giant mailbox. So we may just call bankruptcy. I have no idea what's been responded to, what hasn't been. So we'll see. If you hear from us, then you're lucky. Also, also call us on the voicemail line.
It's a gift. Fanboys.
No, it's just because I don't know who's going to get responded to.
It's an homage.
Other than going forward. Voicemail line, 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697. That's where you can call. Leave us a voicemail around 30 seconds. Tell us your name. Tell us where you're from. And you can get on the show that way, too. And we want to briefly mention that our old pal Ron Richards appeared on Let's Talk Comics with James Viscardi. And he spent about half of that 2-hour show talking about the history of iFanboy with a fair amount of accuracy.
Did you know that he invented dog food? Yeah, they had been trying to think of the perfect – he stumbled upon it, really. It was an accident. But the thing was that he was working on nuclear fusion. And he was going to get it right. It was his idea. I mean,
I will give complete credit. In the first iteration of iFanboy that no one ever visited, did have a social network that did not exist at the time.
That's true.
And he's not the CEO of Facebook right now, though he could be. So it's actually a really fun show. The second half hour of that show is him talking about Image Comics and the current state of the industry and what he does there. So if you're at all curious why Ron left the show, you can find out. It's pretty plain and plainly clear by listening.
I think it was very entertaining and informative, but I don't know because he's not most of your best friend. So I am biased on that. I'm like, oh, this is really interesting.
Right. So I'm curious to think what although the best Ron's best friend club is very large.
Yeah. I think you and I have a good claim to it.
So check out Let's Talk Comics with Ron Richards. That's at letstalkcomics.com. And also while you're on the internet doing that, you can also check out ifanboy.com. That's where you can find this show. You can find all of our old shows. Coming up, we'll have a Guardians of the Galaxy show in just a few weeks. You can look forward to that at some point. Eventually, Paul will finish his Akira series at some point.
Someday.
That'll be exciting, too. And all that is found at ifanboy.com.
And you can follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy and facebook.com/iFanboy. And you can follow us all individually at J. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Fuzzy Typewriter.
I was actually just looking up to see where we were on iTunes reviews, and we are at 1,022 ratings.
Ratings.
There are 21 of those are 1 stars.
Awesome.
So
those are my favorites.
They add up.
Yeah.
Although one of those 1 stars is an accident.
Okay, so 20 of them. That's a nice round number.
We know that having read it, where it's like great podcast, one of my favorites, 1 star. So clearly it was an accident. Maybe, starring.
Maybe we did something wrong. Like this person in 2006 says, I fanboy Yonly Radio. We'd bored that person in 2006. And to be honest, in 2006, we might have been pretty boring.
What if something bad happened to them while they were writing the review and they didn't get to put all the stars in? Like they were defense rated or something?
Uh-huh.
It's tragedy on many levels.
And there's, of course, the famous 1 star, Josh hates fat people. the other guys are okay, period. But Josh clearly hates fat people.
Well, you do.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen My Family in Maine. Anyway. I got hung up on. You can go to iTunes and leave us a rating or review because at this point it's pretty funny. Or you can tell people about the shows that you like on your social networks or in person. Or you can make a reel-to-reel tape recording and take it to your friends who are living like a sort of ironic retro 70s life.
I got 100% on my reel-to-reel test in college, which was really useful for my future career.
Yep. I got that taping right down. Took you to
splicing,
tape.
Taping, getting the audio levels perfect. Yep. He was like, this is perfect. I never touched a reel-to-reel machine in my life.
No, you could end up being a Cold War spy at some point. Go back in time. Go through just walking down the street and go through a portal one day.
Our media education was perfect in case we ended up being time-traveling spies working in the media industry. Thank
Otherwise,
goodness.
Useless.
Otherwise, completely useless. Nope, not true. Conflict. I learned about conflict from Raymond R. Ghazi. That's right. You can look that up. Anyway, I think that we have dwelled on that for a little long. Like how long we dwelled on analog tape conversion, about 4 years, which was the end of analog tape, by the way. Point that out. It's where we're coming from.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul. Shit.
You know, that thing's more fucking irritating than your iPad.
Love my fucking iPad.
So Paul's a rich person.
I just found it.
That is a...
I was in the park one day. I just found it.
There's an homage right there.
That's the first year of the show. See you next week. Make me feel like that. Loving you ain't worth all the suffering. In return, you never give me nothing. Here's the news about loving you. Well, it's something that I used to do. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.